Donald Trump will not become president of the United States. Trump will not be elected president because the American people instinctually, in a very deep sense, understand that bringing our people together, black or white or Latino, Asian American, gay and straight, men and women, people born in America, people who have come to America, will always trump dividing us up. We are at our best when we support each other, when we help each other. When I'm there for you and you are there for me, when we're there for each other's kids, that sense of togetherness always trumps selfishness. And most of all, we will defeat Donald Trump because we know that love trumps hatred.
That kind of thoughtful, non-racist, pragmatic idea was all over the place in the 2016 campaign. And it was definitely present on the Democratic side of the ticket. And for over 2 years now, Americans have been looking for a correction, an eraser, for what they believe is a gigantic mistake that they think America made. A presidential term is 4 years. And with the kind of president that Trump was about to become, 4 years is going to feel like 40. There were a lot of scandals and apparent criminal activity that Trump was involved in. And I imagine people thought maybe it won't be a 4-year term after he was elected. Maybe it won't even be a 2-year term. Perhaps he will not even finish his first term. Then, seemingly, their prayers were potentially answered when in a live TV interview, Trump mentioned that he fired Comey to stop the Russia investigation. Then, Robert Mueller was appointed as special counsel. Democrats and those who oppose this embarrassing president thought to themselves, this is it. Once that report comes out, Trump will be finished. The investigation would go on for almost 2 years. And America, largely progressive America, could not wait. Hats, t-shirts, buttons, stickers, all of it. All of it with Mueller's face or name or likeness. All of it celebrating Mueller's investigation. One best-selling t-shirt used an interpolation of the Miller Beer logo. Do you remember the Miller Beer logo? And instead of it saying, it's Miller time, the t-shirt read, it's Mueller time. People really thought that that was simply going to be the end. You know, that this could be their savior. This was the guy that was going to bring about Judgment Day. And they began to see him as a savior and a god and perhaps the man who would answer the prayers of everyone that still sought to correct the mistake that America made in 2016. In 2018, when the blue wave arrived, progressives were certain that between Mueller and investigations that would now take place in Congress, Trump's goose would be cooked for certain. Then the report came out almost a week ago, and Bill Barr, Trump's attorney general, who had helped George W. Bush carry out the pardons that ended the Iran-Contra investigation, and Barr, who had criticized the Mueller investigation prior to becoming AG, that's the guy who got the one and only copy of the Mueller report. Barr, notably, is also somebody who does not believe that the president, under any circumstances, can be indicted. And in an effort to protect Trump, Barr decided to only release what he thought America should see. That was the plan the whole time. And I want to say to everybody here, as soon as Barr became Attorney General, I knew that this was going to happen. That was the reason Bill Barr got the job. That's it. He's not overly qualified. He's not good at what he does. He's good at covering up. He's good at protecting criminals, largely conservative criminals. And even if the Mueller report suggested that Trump should be indicted, the indictment would not be carried out. It's all over the place. You cannot indict a sitting president. And all at once, Robert Mueller, glorified American hero to those who wanted the end of the Trump era, suddenly became the God that failed. Everything that transpired over the previous week, everything was predictable. Trump and the conservatives were always going to claim victory and full exoneration, no matter what the report said. And those who opposed Trump were always going to say that this report was enough to impeach Trump. Now that it appears it's going to be really hard, if not impossible, to get the report, Democrats need to realize that it's likely, incredibly likely, that Trump is going to serve out his 4 years. And it's entirely possible he might serve 2 terms. And I hope that reality is setting in. Democrats are now going to have to run against and beat an incumbent president. And just like on November 11th, 2016, there is no magic button, no shortcut, no easy answer, no simple solution. Now, what I'm hearing from all the progressives I know is that the investigation was a bust. All for nothing. All for naught. Just why? It's not true. It's absolutely not true. This is Shep Smith from Fox News, one of the folks over at Fox who isn't buying or spreading the lies about this investigation and hasn't over the last almost 2 years.
Giuliani's attack on Brennan involved the dossier compiled by the former British spy Christopher Steele that the administration has repeatedly asserted was what began the Russia investigation. It was not. The Russia investigation began after the former Trump policy advisor, George Papadopoulos, told an Australian diplomat that the Russians had dirt on his then political opponent, Hillary Clinton. That information was passed on to intelligence officials.
And I also want to remind you that this president is far from innocent. Just here's a list. This is compiled by USA Today about all the people that were indicted in this investigation. Roger Stone, longtime Trump associate and political consultant, was indicted in January on seven charges related to lying to investigators about efforts to top Trump campaign ads about WikiLeaks' plans to release emails the Russian operatives had stolen for the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. And if I might remind everybody, it was Donald Trump into an open mic who called for the Russians to steal those emails, which they did in turn for him on the very day that he asked them to do it. Here's a clip of him asking for that and then him being challenged by Katie Turr.
It would be interesting to see. I will tell you this. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press. Let's see if that happens. That'll be next.
Do you have any qualms about asking a foreign government, Russia, China, anybody, to interfere, to hack into a system of anybody's in this country,
let alone
the
president? Let the president talk to him. Look, here's the problem.
No, no, you just called for it a moment ago, Mr. Trump. You said the Russians, I welcome them to find those. You said I welcome them to find those 30,000 emails.
Well, they probably have them. I'd like to have them released.
Does that not give you pause?
No, it gives me no pause. If they
have a foreign government able to,
you know what gives me more pause? That a person in our government, crooked Hillary Clinton, here's what gives me
hope.
Be quiet. I know you want to, you know, save her. That a person in our government, Katie, would delete or get rid of 33,000 emails. That gives me a big problem. After she gets a subpoena, she gets subpoenaed. and she gets rid of 33,000 emails, that gives me a problem. Now, if Russia or China or any other country has those emails, I mean, to be honest with you, I'd love to see them.
The thing that he accused Hillary Clinton of doing in that clip is the exact thing that his administration is doing right now. They are not keeping good records. Jared, his son-in-law, is using WhatsApp to talk to world leaders and is not saving those. And he's supposed to save all of his communications, all of his official communications because of the Presidential Records Act. All the things that he said he hated, some government official did this. His administration is doing those exact things right now, and they're not keeping records of it, and he's using an unsecured phone. I just want to remind you some of these other people that were indicted in the Mueller investigation. Michael Flynn, a former national security advisor, pleaded guilty December 2017 to lying to investigators about meetings with Russia during the presidential transition. Michael Cohen, Trump's former personal lawyer and fixer, pleaded guilty November 2018. He begins a prison sentence in just a few months. Paul Manafort, his former campaign chairman, was convicted in August of tax and bank charges. He also pleaded guilty in September to conspiracy to commit money laundering. He has 7.5 years in prison. It's the only time in history that a sitting president has seen his campaign manager go to prison, ever. Rick Gates, who worked for Manafort before the campaign and also headed the Trump inaugural committee, pleaded guilty in February 2018, and he cooperated with Mueller and is awaiting sentencing right now. Konstantin Kalimnik is an alleged Russian spy who worked with Manafort and Gates in Kiev. He was indicted in June 2018 on charges of conspiracy to obstruct justice. George Papadopoulos, and this is great. So George Papadopoulos worked for the Trump campaign and was convicted of lying. Hold on, it gets better. He just granted an interview to NBC News. And for the time that he spent in prison, he went to prison because of the Mueller investigation. The time he spent in prison, he called it, and I'm quoting here, Trump country. He said, prison is Trump country. Prisoners love Donald Trump. I'll get you the clip. I'll try to bring it next week. Alex Van Der Zwaan. Dutch attorney Alex Van Der Zwaan pleaded guilty in February 2018 to lying to FBI agents about his work for Manafort and Gates. He served 30 days in prison and was fined $20,000. Richard Pinedo pleaded guilty in February 2018 to identity fraud for trading in bank account numbers from stolen identities that were used by the Russians. Pinedo was sentenced to 6 months in prison in order to complete 100 hours of community service. 12 Russian nationals that were tied to hacking. Remember, we know this now. We're not guessing about this. We know that the Russians hacked into our election and did whatever they could to help Donald Trump win it. 12 Russian nationals. And of course, the Internet Research Agency, which is the agency in Russia that, by the way, would not operate in Russia if they were not allowed to by Putin. Putin wants this thing to be there so that they can trick people who use social media in America. If you're on Facebook, if you're on Instagram, if you're on Twitter, the Russian Internet Research Agency is targeting you with memes and ads and whatever it takes, not only to make Trump president in 2016, but to see that he is reelected next year. So I don't want to hear about how it was for nothing because it didn't remove the top guy from office, the guy that you didn't want to become president. I don't want to hear about how this is for nothing. It is not for nothing. And by the way, just a reminder, Trump at this point still has more criminal indictments in his administration than any previous president. Even Ronald Reagan, before Donald Trump, it was Ronald Reagan that had more criminal indictments, more people that were indicted and sent to prison and served time and all the rest. Well, it used to be Reagan. Now it's Donald Trump. Okay. And soon he'll have more than all of the past presidents combined. Mueller's investigation ended, but it's not over. His investigation sparked dozens of other investigations in other state attorneys' offices across the nation, most notably the Western District of Virginia and the Southern District of New York, SDNY. You'll hear a lot about that one in the coming months. And those are the indictments that you should want. If you believe that Trump is a criminal, remember, The indictments and convictions from those state offices can't be pardoned. If an indictment would have came out of Mueller's office, he resigns, he gets pardoned, he pardons himself, whatever. There's any number of ways he could have done that. But if it comes out of those other offices, he can't be pardoned, even if it's someone else. However, I still don't want you, whose heart is broken by the Mueller report, I don't want you to wait on those investigations to conclude. Your focus right now should be defeating Trump in 2020. And it's no secret that Trump doesn't ever plan to leave office, because as long as he's president, he can't be indicted. So his plan is to just stay there. And this is where you come in. Don't take this upcoming election season for granted. Vote. Turn out. Get your friends to vote. Show up in undeniable numbers. There are no certain victories. Vote as if Trump's poll numbers are over 60% and his odds of re-election are 85%. By the way, that's what Hillary's odds were of getting elected in 2016, 85%. And don't put all of your faith in gods. Any gods. They almost always fail. Believe in yourself. Be your own god. And take control of your own destiny. And I want to go ahead and leave you with this when it comes to the 2020 election. So the common wisdom was that Donald Trump was going to spend the next number of weeks and potentially months going after all of the people that either talked about or promoted or criticized him over the Mueller investigation. It looked like he was going to just pick fights with everybody. And get revenge and get vengeance and all these other things. But what he has decided to do instead of that, hold up. He has decided to go to the courts to have them overturn Obamacare. That may not excite you, but during the 2018 election, of all of the things that people said that they cared about, the thing that they cared about more than any other thing, they still cared about, you know, immigration and taxes and all this other stuff. But the number one issue that brought out more people than any other issue was healthcare. And they see the Democrats as vastly better on healthcare. Yeah, that's what we got. Don't worry about it. We can win this one. Because it seems Donald Trump is just determined to lose. But hey, don't take it for granted.
Problem in this country, it's called Muslims. We know our current president is one. Right. You know he's not even an American.
We need this
first
question.
Certificate,
this
man.
First question.
But anyway, we have training camps growing where they want to kill us.
Mm-hmm.
That's my question. When can we get rid of?
We're going to be looking at a lot of different things. And, you know, a lot of people are saying that, and a lot of people are saying that bad things are happening out there. We're going to be looking at that and plenty of other things.
How that right there was not the end of the election for him, I will never know. Openly being racist, openly being a religious bigot, taking a question like that. Could you imagine if a Democrat took that question and answered it that way? When John McCain was asked in 2008, he straight up shut that woman down. She said, Barack Obama, I heard he's an Arab. No, ma'am. No, I could almost quote the damn thing. No, ma'am. He's a good, honest family man who I happen to have some disagreements with. Boom! I was never a backer of John McCain, but that was a very statesman-like moment. And I remember when it happened, I wasn't all that surprised by it. And now, when I hear the current president say openly racist things, I'm not surprised by it. And that's a problem. So there was a shooting in New Zealand. This president based on all of the rhetoric, what we'll refer to as rhetorical ammunition, with all of his rhetoric, is inspiring terrorists, not just here at home, white Christian terrorists, but is now inspiring white Christian terrorists around the world.
Well, Craig, in some ways, it's really not surprising. People like this, the perpetrators of a terrorist attack like this, they often look for code. They look for clues. Sometimes those clues and code are a figment of their imagination, and sometimes they're not. And I think the tragic reality is that President Trump, whether intentionally or I think in a lot of cases even inadvertently, has provided a lot of fodder for people like this. This was the same president who praised good people on both sides in the aftermath of Charlottesville. This was the same president who ironically told an apocryphal story about 49 Muslims being killed with bullets dipped in pig's blood, and the 50th being sent to tell the rest of his counterparts of what had been perpetrated.
What's interesting about that story that gentleman ends with right there is the 49 dead and leaving the one alive to tell the story. When we first got the headlines around the world about the New Zealand mass shooting, the body count at first was 49, but with so many people critically wounded, of course, it kept rising. And it's not just the political rhetoric that he chooses to use. It's also his absolute unwillingness to disavow racism.
And what we're seeing with the president is, you know, the president's proving the terrorist murderer right again. How does the leader of the free world go to church 2 days after a slaughter of innocents halfway around the world? Is mentioned in the killer's manifesto, not make a definitive statement against white nationalism, white identity politics, white supremacy, and disavow his role in any of that. But we're not talking about a normal president, and we're not talking about a normal presidency. We're talking about a man who ceded the moral authority of the Oval Office when he said that there were fine people on both sides after the horror of Charlottesville.
The headline over at the Sydney Morning Herald, Christchurch shooters, and the fact that it happened in a place called Christchurch, stunning to me. Christchurch shooters manifesto reveals an obsession with white supremacy over Muslims. Quoting here, Prime Minister Scott Morrison confirmed an Australia had been arrested in New Zealand and said he had been briefed on the manifesto, describing it as a work of hate. Across 74 pages, the man's dossier regurgitated familiar objections to immigration, multiculturalism, and laments the decaying culture of the white European West. This guy could have worked for Fox News. He raised and then dismissed the idea he could have been radicalized by ideas given to him by friends or associates because those around him were the typical Australians, apathetic, for the most part, apolitical, only truly showing motivation in matters of animal rights, environmentalism, and taxation, meaning it didn't happen in his home in Australia. The gunman did not identify as an Australian despite being born there. The origin of my language is European, my culture is European, my political beliefs are European, My philosophical beliefs are European, my identity is European, and most importantly, my blood is European, he wrote. What is an Australian but a drunk European? Kidding, he says, but Australia is a European colony, particularly of British stock and thereby an extension of Europe. The terrorist, who we're not going to name, described himself as an ethno-nationalist eco-fascist, having previously identified as a communist, an anarchist, and a libertarian. He wrote that he believed in ethnic autonomy for all peoples with a focus on the preservation of nature and natural order. In the dossier, he made reference to the horrific SCAF gang rapes in Sydney in the year 2000. But this manifesto suggested he was preoccupied with rapes that had occurred in England and more recently in Germany by non-Europeans. In his writing, he echoed the views expressed by Anders Breivik, the Norwegian right-wing terrorist who killed 77 people with a bomb and a gun massacre in Norway in 2011. The dossier also praised United States President Donald Trump. You must be proud. As a symbol of renewed white identity and common purpose, and addresses grievances about the left's march through the institution. Wow. One of the president's spokespeople, Mercy Schlapp, was asked about the praise for the American president, Donald Trump, in the dossier.
The shooter in the New Zealand attacks cited the president in his manifesto. I'm just wondering if the White House has any reaction.
It's outrageous to even make that connection between this deranged individual that committed this evil crime to the president, who has repeatedly condemned bigotry, racism, and has made it very clear that this is a terrorist attack. And we are there to support and stand with the people of New Zealand.
It's outrageous. Did you hear that? It's absolutely outrageous. That why would anybody think that?
We have a problem in this country. It's called Muslims. We know our current president is one. Right. You know he's not even an American.
We need this
first
question.
Certificate, man.
First question.
But anyway, we have training camps growing where they want to kill us.
Mm-hmm.
That's my question. When can we get rid of it?
We're going to be looking at a lot of different things. And, you know, a lot of people are saying that, and a lot of people are saying that bad things are happening out there. We're going to be looking at that and plenty of other things.
Why would anybody think that this president was either a racist or a religious bigot? I can't seem to put my finger on it. So New Zealand decided that it was time to show America and the world how things get done.
Today I'm announcing that New Zealand will ban all military-style semi-automatic weapons. We will also ban all assault rifles. We will ban all high-capacity magazines. We will ban all parts with the ability to convert semi-automatic or any other type of firearm into a military-style semi-automatic weapon.
That's amazing. It took them a week. Not even a week. And what they've decided is they're going to do a gun buyback program. We've had a bump stock buyback program here in America for a little while now because we finally managed to get rid of bump stocks in America, or at least ban them. But they decided in New Zealand that the thing to do with a mass shooting is to ban all of the assault weapons. And I know I can hear the dumb conservative arguments now, but do spoons make people fat? What about the terrorists that use the car? See, here's the thing. Spoons are used for other things. And by the way, nobody has to gorge themselves with a spoon. Nobody's going to walk into a building and spoon feed overwhelming amounts of food to 50 people in 5 minutes. It's just never going to happen. And cars are used for other things other than just killing people. Guns, when used as directed, are for murder. That's it. So what do we do here in America? Thoughts and prayers. What do they do in any other country in the world where they've got thoughtful people, good politicians, and when they realize that nobody needs these weapons of war? They do what we should have done here a long time ago, but we can't be motivated to do that because somehow that's taking away somebody's right. Never mind your right to live. It's taking away somebody's right if we ban these weapons. And it took them a week, just like that. We had 20 first graders and 6 teachers cut in half in Newtown, cut in half with guns. And we said, we can't do anything about it. Well, we can do one thing about it. Thoughts and prayers. Just like that, they banned the weapons. It's like they didn't even try thoughts and prayers.
This is who I'm making fun of when I make a joke on Twitter the day of a tragedy. The people who see something horrible happen in the world, and they run to the internet, and they run to their social media, their Facebook, their Twitter, whatever they got, and they all write down the exact same thing. My thoughts and prayers My thoughts and prayers with the people in Aurora. My thoughts and prayers with the families in Boston. Do you know what that's worth? Nothing. Not less than nothing. Less than nothing. You are not giving any of your time, your money, or even your compassion. All you were doing is saying, don't forget about me today. Don't forget about me. Lots of crazy distractions in the news right now, but don't forget how sad I am.
It took them a week and 7 years after Sandy Hook. We still can't get it done. It's not that we're losing our leadership position in the world. We've given it up. We've ceded it because we don't want it. Does anyone remember the MAGA bomber? We tend to forget about it. Of course, the guy is now pleaded guilty and is likely going to prison for life, Caesar Sayoc. The MAGA bomber. He sent all these bombs to all of Trump's political enemies. Right? None of the bombs went off, but he sent them all, you know, just to scare them. Terrorist, right? And how about Christopher Hassan? This is the white nationalist, white Christian terrorist. We're so worried about Muslims and about brown people, about all these other folks, and we're just completely ignoring the real terrorists.
The sheer number and force of the weapons that were recovered from Mr. Hassan's residence in this case, coupled with the disturbing nature of his writings, appear to reflect a very significant threat to the safety of our community, particularly given the position of trust that Mr. Hassan held with the United States government.
It took Trump forever to address the Christopher Hassan story. The white nationalist that praised him and cited him as an inspiration was going to carry out all these terrorist attacks against brown folk, Muslims. It took Trump forever to say something. And then when they said, hey, excuse me, sir, are you going to disavow? Yeah, I disavow, whatever. Where, you know, if he really cared, he would have been tweeting about it immediately. Tweeting his disavow immediately. Right? The guy tweets 60 times in a weekend about how much he hates Mueller and how small his penis is or whatever he talks about. I don't watch his Twitter feed. I just hear about it in the news. And the Jesse Smollett story has taken an interesting turn. So Chicago has now dropped all the charges against him. So does that mean he's innocent? So this came out right after we learned that what happened to Jesse Smollett was likely a planned attack. The headline here, whites have rights, outrage over billboard attacking Jesse Smollett and Representative John Lewis. So, quoting here, as Pittsburgh's WPXI reports, the controversial digital billboard stands on Route 422 outside of Worthington, Pennsylvania. Its changing screen features multiple messages. One reads, whites have rights, while another features a photo of actor Jesse Smollett, who's being investigated for an alleged hate crime hoax. Jesse Smollett hangs himself, it says. Sets race relations back 100 years, it reads. A third message follows, features images of various politicians, including Representative John Lewis, Representative Maxine Waters, and accuses them of being black racists. Black racists. Here's the thing. If somebody's a racist, they are just a racist. It doesn't matter what color they're. If they are racist, they're being racist. All right. So John Plasek, who owns the billboard, denied any racist intentions. Racism is misunderstood in America, and I want to have a conversation, he said. We need to get over it. I'm black. You're white. You're Hispanic. Who cares? I don't care about that. I do care about how you act and if you stand for my flag, our flag. I don't know why they love the flag so much. I guess it's because it's got white in it. We got to get people talking, he continued. We got to get them excited, and that's what I've done. The board was never meant to hurt anybody. I would never do that. I'm a patriot. I'm an American. Period. Yikes. But, of course, critics say that his messages are inflammatory. I don't see how this is thought-provoking, Michael Allshouse, who called the billboard racist, told WPXI. I don't see it as instigating thoughtful discussion as much as it is provoking and agitating. See, the belief in the white community that is often emboldened, well, the racist white community that is often emboldened by Donald Trump, there is a white genocide going on and we've got to do something about it. And white people are being white people are becoming a minority. Yes, that's true. I am white and I don't care. It does not scare me. I do not see people coming from Mexico and South America in search of a better life as an insult or an invasion. I encounter and I work with lots of folks who do not have white skin all the time. And you know what? It would appear, just from talking with them, that they are a lot like me. They tend to talk, you know, like me. We have a lot of the same interests. We have a lot of the same goals. They seem to be just like me. I don't have a problem with brown folk. I'm not scared of them. And I don't understand the folks who are. But there's this thing. I'm European and we got to protect white identity. And although I make mention of Trump's name a lot when it comes to this subject, he's obviously not where it started. But he has helped it metastasize. And these are the folks that he is fighting for right now. And the way that these folks who believe that white genocide is taking place, these folks have decided one of the ways to remedy what they perceive as a problem is with guns. And for this crowd, there is never, ever enough guns. We've got shootings in movie theaters. We need to have more armed guards in movie theaters. We got shootings in grocery stores. We need more armed guards in grocery stores. We got shootings in classrooms. We need to arm teachers.
You're a mom. You send your kids to school. Would you feel safer knowing that your children's teachers were armed?
I think it's an interesting conversation to be having, and it's a new and fresh idea.
Are you advising your dad on this? Do you advise him on other topics?
I think that having a teacher who is armed, who cares deeply about her students or his students, and who is capable and qualified to bear arms is not a bad idea, but it's an idea that needs to be discussed.
So even after a school shooting concludes, and they take away the shooter, and they haul out all the bodies, they do a body count, they convict the shooter if he's still alive, it's not over. And it's not that it's not over because it's going to happen again. It's not over because it's not over. The headline from CNN, 1 week, 3 suicides, 1 tragic connection to school massacres. Quoting here. So Jeremy Richmond, 49, spent his final years channeling his anguish into action. He killed himself this week. He lost his 6-year-old daughter, AVL, in the Sandy Hook massacre. AVL was among the 20 students and 6 adults killed. After the shooting, he co-founded the AVL Foundation, a nonprofit named for Richmond's daughter that focuses on violence prevention through research and community engagement. In 2013, Richmond told CNN how he and his wife were coping, about his desire to give back. Every day we need to get out of bed. And Jen and I just came up with this beautiful idea to get us out of bed, he told CNN's Anderson Cooper. Every day we try to find something of beauty, something that makes the world a good place. And every day we want to make sure that we try to really strive to give back something of beauty to the world. Richmond died of an apparent suicide and was found in his Connecticut office building Monday morning, according to Newtown Police. The foundation he helped launch said it will continue fulfilling his goals. Jeremy's mission will be carried out by the many who loved him, including many who share the heartache and trauma he has suffered since December 14th, 2012. We are crushed to pieces, but this is important work, and we will continue because, as Jeremy would say, we have to. We'll get back to him in just a minute. Then there was Sydney Aiello. Sydney was 19 years old and a 2018 graduate of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High. She was a bubbly, outgoing cheerleader who was always eager to say hello to everyone in the hallway, according to a former history teacher. But everything changed on Valentine's Day 2018 when a gunman killed 17 people at the school, including her close friend, Meadow Pollack. The massacre profoundly affected her, and she suffered from survivor's guilt and was diagnosed with PTSD. Last year, she shared a Facebook post after the suicides of Robin Williams, Kate Spade, and Anthony Bourdain. The post quotes friends or relatives of the late celebrities who described them as happy people. It stressed the need to check on all loved ones, even those who appear to be the strongest. Aiello was a student at Florida Atlantic University, and she killed herself on March 17th. Her funeral was this past Friday. She lit up every room that she entered, wrote the organizer of a GoFundMe page set up to help pay for Aiello's, to help her family pay for expenses. She filled her days with cheerleading, doing yoga, and brightening the days of others. Sydney aspired to work in the medical field and helping others. It was a privilege to have you in our lives, Sydney. We will always miss you. And then there was another one, another Stoneman Douglas Parkland student. And that one wasn't named. The family decided not to release the name of that one. So even if we go with this effing stupid idea about arming teachers, because that's the conservative argument, right? That when these shootings happen, they just need to end as fast as possible, right? And if everyone in the class has a gun, right? Or if just the teacher has a gun and is ready to just play out Zero Dark 30 at any time of the day. When people go into the theater of war and they have to live like that constantly, they come back and they're never the same. A car backfires and they duck for cover. They hear loud noises and they just start swinging. It never turns out okay. They never go back to being normal. And so this idea that if we arm teachers and end these as fast as possible, however many people get killed on the day of will never, ever be the final body count. The better thing to do, the grown-up thing to do, would be to end the violence. And you don't end the violence by simply cleaning up the bodies and saying, don't do this again. You end the violence by, one, first getting rid of the thing that makes it possible for that thing to happen. And two, and this is the more long-term one, you have to change the culture. You have to change the way we talk to and about each other. We have to change the way that we treat each other. We have to change the way that we see our neighbors.
So Sandy Hook is a synthetic, completely fake, with actors, in my view, manufactured. I couldn't believe it at first. I knew they had actors there, clearly, but I thought they killed some real kids. And it just shows how bold they are.
So the thing that Alex Jones and a lot of conservatives have struggled with, just like the rest of us humans, are these mass shootings. So what they've done to justify not doing anything about these particular weapons is they said that these mass shootings, Sandy Hook in particular, are all fake or mostly fake. And that's the way they say, no, it's all actors, crisis actors, because if they're being honest, then they would be where we are at on this subject, where we need to do something about gun violence. And then there's this. The headline, Alex Jones is pushing conspiracy theories about the death of a Sandy Hook father who was suing him. So one of the things that no doubt made it incredibly hard for Jeremy Richman is that after he lost his six-year-old daughter in the slaughter at Sandy Hook, that he got harassed by Alex Jones followers for years after that. It wasn't enough to just lose your child in the massacre. You had to get death threats and emails and physical mail, people driving by your house, people calling you on your home and your cell phone, telling you that your daughter was never alive and that you need to stop lying about it. Jeremy Richman was one of the people that was suing Alex Jones because he's the guy. There's a few other folks, but he's the guy that really, really gave this conspiracy legs and has led to all of these parents from the Sandy Hook children all being harassed by these folks. And I'm fairly certain that one of Mr. Richmond's final thoughts was that he's going to be with his daughter and he's not going to have to suffer this harassment anymore. Think about losing a child. Nothing could be worse in the world. And then to lose your child and to have to undergo constant harassment from these InfoWars people, it just had to make it 1,000 times harder. So if Sandy Hook isn't real, certainly the suicide of this father is also not real, correct? Correct. So Alex Jones decided to push that idea this week, saying that Jason Richmond did not really kill himself. First of all, his child did not die in Sandy Hook, and he did not kill himself. What is his reasoning? What is his excuse about why Jason Richmond is not dead? The Sandy Hook father is not dead. Well, because this news is coming out right now just to take the good news off of the front page about how Donald Trump didn't collude. He said that. He said that all the good news that has come out that has cleared Trump in the Russia investigation, which, by the way, has not really happened. He said that this whole Jason Richmond suicide he didn't kill himself. This is just to take away the good news from Donald Trump. Amazing. These are the white Christian gun nut delusionists that are pushing this stuff and that a whole lot of people are following. By the way, we don't need this story to take that out of the headlines. The fact that Donald Trump has decided to strip everybody of their health care, knowing how popular it is for people to have health care, how popular Obamacare is, how popular Medicare for All is getting, the fact that Donald Trump is giving that as a gift to the Democrats in 2020, that is what has wiped his supposed good news off the front pages.
Mr. President, could you tell us to what degree some of the outside conservative voices helped to shape your views on this national emergency?
I would talk about it. Look, Sean Hannity has been a terrific, terrific supporter of what I do, not of me. If I changed my views, he wouldn't be with me. Rush Limbaugh, I think he's a great guy. He's a guy who can speak for 3 hours without a phone call. Try doing that sometime. For 3 hours he speaks. He's got one of the biggest audiences in the history of the world. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. They don't decide policy. In fact, if I went opposite, I mean, they have somebody, Ann Coulter. I don't know her. I hardly know her. I haven't spoken to her in way over a year. But the press loves saying Ann Coulter. Probably if I did speak to her, she'd be very nice. I just don't have the time to speak to her. So I like her. But she's off the reservation, but anybody that knows her understands that.
And you can say to me, Melvin, why are you talking about a psycho, a clear madman, somebody who doesn't really have any... Yes, he does. Yeah, Alex Jones has a ton of followers, and one of those followers is, of course, the president. And the president said in that clip right there, he just goes on and on and on about all of the conservative media that he consumes and how those people influence his life. After he became president, one of the first people to get a press pass to the White House was InfoWars, the guy who said that Sandy Hook didn't happen, that the plastic is turning the frogs gay, that Jason Richmond didn't die, all of these things. The guy who said all that was one of the first people. And Donald Trump, as a candidate, went on his show. And all of these folks are absolutely upside down and inside out racist. And if they are not racist, it is pretty amazing how they are so willing to traffic in racist language.
I've got a friend. He keeps up with these groups. He says they're moving away from the old violent racist style. So that's what Duke is peddling now. It's becoming mainstream.
Duke.
David Duke, current Grand Wizard of the Klan, but he's always in a three-piece suit, never seen in a hood or robe in public, and he now goes by National Director. So He's clearly got his sights on higher office.
Politics? How so?
Think it's another way to sell hate?
Keep going.
Think about it. Affirmative action, immigration, crime, tax reform. Mm. He says no one wants to be called a bigot anymore. I guess Archie Bunker made that too uncool. So the idea is under all these issues, everyday Americans can accept it, support it, until eventually, one day, you get somebody in the White House that embodies it.
Sarge. Come on. America would never elect somebody like David Duke, President of the United States of America.
Coming from a black man, that's pretty naive.
That's a clip from the movie Black Klansman. And just a reminder, David Duke was one of the first people to endorse Donald Trump. The KKK followed right behind. And just because there's all these suits in the media that are pushing all of these insane ideas about guns and about racism, you know, and about Sandy Hook not being real, and about how all these hordes are invading from the South. This really is the language of racism, of white nationalism and white supremacy, what I talked about on last week's show. And in conservative media outlets, they have a safe space for this kind of white power language. And they've realized that it's not a good idea to go around in the white hoods anymore screaming the N-word. As a matter of fact, a lot of these groups don't even use the swastika anymore. They've come up with a new symbol. And by their own admission, they go, yeah, swastika kind of turns people away, but we can talk about it this way, and it doesn't. And it's happening on college campuses too, where they're just disguising all of this white nationalism, all of this racism. One of the stories that came out this week, and I suppose I'm going to finish up with this because I'm running out of time. Facebook has finally decided that they are going to stop hate speech. This is real. So before, if you said you were a straight up Nazi, that wasn't necessarily protected speech. But if you said that you were a white supremacist or a white nationalist or a white identitarian, that kind of stuff was okay. And now they've said, you know what? With all of the overlap between all of these groups that believe in white ethnocentrism, they said, they're finally going to do something about the hate speech that's on their platform or their platforms. They also own Instagram. So here's my question. Here's what I want to leave you with. Is there any way to put that genie back in the bottle after they have allowed these white supremacists, neo-Nazis, to operate on their platform for so long? Is there any way for them to really put that genie back in the bottle? And remember this, when it comes to hate speech, conservatives are all the way for free speech. But when it comes to criticizing these movements or criticizing the Grand Wizard of the KKK, also known as our current president, that is the kind of free speech that they are not for. We're going to be watching this one for a while. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 290. Woo! Approaching that 300, kids. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to engage you. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and I want to thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I have woken you up, good morning.